Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Returning now to the DUP's leadership issues this morning, as we discussed earlier and you heard in the news bulletin, it's understood that a significant majority of her party's 28 Stormont Assembly members and four of its eight Westminster MPs have signed a letter stating they have no confidence in her or her deputy Nigel Dodds. Now, part of this story involves controversy around gay conversion therapy. Eight DUP constituency organisations had written letters expressing concern that Arlene Foster abstained from an assembly vote to ban such practices. So eight of them had concerns, rather than voting specifically against the ban, which is what they wanted her to do. Well, I'm joined now by Doug Beattie, who's Ulster Unionist Party MLA, who tabled the motion on gay conversion therapy, and also Tim Kearns, a former DUP special advisor. Thank you both for joining us. And Doug, firstly to you, this motion was passed, but the DUP clearly wasn't happy with it.
I think there's a number of issues with this, I suppose. The DUP submitted an amendment, and that amendment had two parts. The first part was about what they thought was protections they needed for religious organisations. But the second one was to remove a line which was in my motion, which said that it was fundamentally wrong to view the LGBT community as needing a fix or a cure. And to put that in an amendment to remove that line, you get the sense that there is people within the DUP who genuinely believe that there are people in the LGBT community who require a fix or a cure. And that, to me, is regressive and fundamentally wrong.
Will you explain to me the issue around protections for religious organisations?
Well, I can tell you as far as my perception is, and other people will tell you what their perception is, but I'll be quite clear. Private prayer, pastoral care, or spiritual beliefs is not conversion therapy. What is conversion therapy? If there is an intent to try and change somebody's sexuality, so if private prayer is supportive, then there's no issue there. But if something is harmful, if it is subversive, if it is coercive, if it is targeting the young or the vulnerable in order to do something which will cause harm, then that is fundamentally wrong. I don't believe that there are priests or ministers or pastors out there who want to harm society. So the intent of the motion, and this is the important bit, the intent of the motion was to stop harmful practices which were conversion therapy. It has nothing to do with the protections that are already in place for church and freedom of thought and freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm. Tim, can I bring you in on that? Is the DUP suggesting that a ban on gay conversion therapy would actually criminalise someone who's going to talk to a member of the clergy? Is that the concern?
Well, I think that was probably one of the concerns from last week. I'm not sure that was really what's led to the actions of the last 24 hours with Arlene Foster. And I think it's not just the DUP who hold concerns about that. I think there's other religious representative organisations like the Evangelical Alliance who've been seeking assurances on that from Boris Johnson and from Doug and from others. But look, I think, you know, there has been a conflation here of this issue in terms of Doug's motion and then what's happened in the last 24 hours. I actually don't think that the story holds up to scrutiny that yet constituency associations wrote to Arlene Foster. I don't actually think that happened. I think there might have been a bit of confusion in and around what letters were and were not being written, and what those letters were and were not about.
You don't think that's right, that the eight DUP constituency organisations wrote to her expressing concern that she abstained from this assembly vote to ban gay conversion therapy?
Well, just from a practical point of view, I don't think that could possibly be the case because, you know, I mean, it's the same in the Ulster Unionist Party as the DUP. I mean, its constituency associations need to meet to form a view, and no constituency associations meeting at the moment. Now, I have no doubt that there are individuals who may have been office holders within constituency associations who may have written letters, but I don't believe that the constituency associations, and particularly some of the ones that were listed, would seem very odd that they would be writing those views. So I think, you know, we're conflating two issues here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was the trigger point for this to happen. Like, what is the DUP?
Why didn't it
happen sooner then, Tim, if this wasn't the trigger point?
I think the trigger point has been numerous things over the last number of years. And I think what happened actually in the last week wasn't really so much to do with Doug's motion that was before the Assembly. I think it was maybe more with Arlene Foster's style of handling that was maybe more of an issue than really the substance of the motion. So I think that something was brewing and something was coming and something was happening. And I think, you know, there was not a great exchange between MLAs and the party leader last week. And however that was handled, I mean, Sam McBride in the newsletter, his article described it as erratic behaviour. And I don't know exactly what it is that Sam had heard, but I think that that's more what's going on than the actual issue.
What do you suspect that meant, erratic behaviour?
Well, I mean, some of the MLAs I've talked to have said that, you know, Arlene's becoming increasingly aloof from the group. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's certainly what people have said to me, that she's become, you know, somewhat aloof and maybe erratic in the way that she's dealt with people. And I think we've actually seen that in respect of the protocol in January. On the one hand, she was saying, let's work this for the benefit of the people of Northern Ireland. And on the other hand, she was saying, oh, well, we've got to get rid of this protocol. Well, it couldn't be both. And I think we've seen those mixed messages from Arlene Foster quite a bit over the last few months. And I think it's left people scratching their heads as to where her true position on things are. And I think that what's been played out in public with things like the Northern Ireland Protocol and erratic behaviour around that and erratic policy positions played out behind the scenes as well. Yeah. And I actually think conflating convergent therapy with this is actually looking at the story from the wrong angle.
All right. Do you agree with that, Doug, that this is not about gay conversion therapy and the DUP stance on the same?
Kind of do, if I'm really honest with you. I think to make some really fair points here, there's a real disconnect between what is those in the party who are hard right and Arlene Foster who is maybe moving slightly more in a different direction. So I think there's a problem in that disconnect between the parliamentary party in Westminster and the MLAs in Stormont and the leadership itself. So I think that whole disconnect is a problem. You could argue that the motion on gay conversion therapy could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. It certainly wasn't something that was in isolation, but it does stack up with an awful lot of other things. You know, when the leader of the DUP is saying that no DUP minister will take part in North-South bodies, and then a week later, a DUP minister takes part in the North-South body. You can see where there's a real confusion taking place within the party. So, Tim, I think he's right. You can't conflate the two, but there's certainly a hard element, right, you know, of the right of the DUP who are feeling disenfranchised, and they've now made a move. And it's all a big thing added together, I think, has created the problem.
I think Doug's absolutely right. I think he's hit the nail on the head there, and there is these mixed messages. But I've got a challenge for Doug, actually, you know, because where's the Ulster Unionist Party in all of this? I think what we need in Northern Ireland is a Liberal Unionist Party. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who could agree with what Doug's saying and agree with the position where Doug's at. And I think there's a lot of people in the DUP who would be very comfortable in a political party where Doug's at. But I think the Ulster Unionist Party, you need to find your voice. Where is it? Because here's the problem for you, Doug. People who are voting for the DUP are now moving, we saw this in 2019, are now moving from the DUP directly to the Alliance Party because the Ulster Unionist Party has lost their voice in these issues. That's and the Ulster Unionist Party isn't making ground.
Doug, fair point.
Let's hear the Ulster Unionist voice.
Yeah, I'm certainly not in here to have to defend the Ulster Unionist Party. But you know, I'm also a pragmatist and I listen to what Tim has to say as I listen to what other people have to say. And in many ways, our voice gets drowned out. It gets drowned out as people try to pick up the bones of the Ulster Unionist Party and they don't look at our policies. Our very strong policy, which talks about that we want to have one single educational system here in Northern Ireland, you know, where Catholics and Protestants are educated together. That's a progressive policy, and it's not new. It's a policy we've had since our inception.
Do you hold that policy?
Yes, Tim. I know, but we have differences in regards to justice. We have differences in regards to legacy. We have differences, even in my own constituency area, about grammar school educations here. We have differences.
I just want to come in here for a second because you both say that this is not about gay conversion therapy, and yet you both talk about progression and moving to the right. The Stephen Nolan Show on BBC Radio Ulster was discussing this earlier and had heard from a DUP supporter who wants Arlene Foster out because, as this caller put it, she wants to get the gay vote on board. Sodomy is condemned in the word of God. It's sinful. It's evil. Now, is that part of the DUP's base vote, Tim?
Well, look, I think Doug articulates things very well. I think there is a problem within the DUP in terms of there's a hard right element within the DUP, and there's a much more softer liberal element within the DUP. And Doug, I think, would be much closer and would be quite comfortable with people on that liberal side. I mean, a lot of what Doug Beattie says, I agree with wholeheartedly. I mean, Doug, you know, 99% of what Doug says, I can support. So there's actually, you know, a wafer thin policy dichotomy between myself and Doug. But there is a fundamentalist Christian
and you're moving, and the DUP is moving further and further down that road.
Well, I think
as
here's
of today.
The difficulty. Here's the difficulty for the DUP, and this is a difficulty they have to sort out. And I think it's a difficulty Doug would have with the party, and I would share his difficulty with the DUP in this. It's because there's so many of the elected representatives who come from a fundamentalist evangelical tradition, and they live in this fundamentalist evangelical bubble. That's the people they socialise with. That's the people they know. And they think that they're getting agreement from people because they're just socialising. They're just spending time with people who have exactly the same view as them. And I think what we need, actually, and this is to be admired in Doug. Doug is someone who encourages questioning, who encourages policy positions being sharpened in the debate. And the DUP resiles from that, particularly within the hard right.
Where does the DUP go from here if they're relying on this hardcore right-wing fundamentalist base to keep them going when you see yourself where the wind is blowing towards the middle ground? You've told Doug here to watch out for it. You're saying that the votes that he should have are going to the Alliance Party. Look, where does this leave the DUP in its future?
And the DUP has an even bigger problem to its right, because those votes are now going to Jim Ellis and TUV. The DUP stands at the moment in a position of a bit of crisis. And I think there's an opportunity for Doug and the Ulster Unionist Party to get their act together and to really be that voice to speak for that more liberal position. But I do feel that people like Doug, your voice is held back by the structures of the Ulster Unionist Party, by some of the more traditional votes within the Ulster Unionist Party that Doug has to contend with as well. So not only the DUP, who has voters from that fundamentalist evangelical tradition, there are people who are still within the core of the Ulster Unionist
Party
who
hold
those positions too.
What's going to happen now, it would seem, is that the DUP is going to get a leader who is even more hardline than Arlene Foster.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, Jeffrey Donaldson, Gavin Robinson are certainly not more hardline than Arlene Foster. Well, you know, Edwin Poots would certainly be seen from that hardline right of the DUP. And I think it is a problem for unionism as a whole. I think this is a problem for the Ulster Unionist Party as much as it's a problem for the DUP. There is a growing voice within unionism that wants to vote for a liberal unionist party, and that liberal unionist party doesn't exist. The Ulster Unionist Party, some members like Doug, would make the right noises in that, but I think now is the time for Doug to stand up and those liberal voices like myself to stand up as well. And let's put an alternative. Let's put an alternative that shows unionism is strong and confident in our centenary year and puts forward that strong, confident unionist voice.
Doug, do you accept that criticism, Doug?
I accept all criticism. I take criticism as being constructive, but I think it's something that we all take on board and we amend. If we don't listen to people's views, then we just become a party that just looks at our own navels, and that's slightly pointless. I mean, I heard that interview on Nolan this morning. You never get that stage when your mouth opens and you're like, what on earth is this woman saying? I was aghast by what I heard. I am surprised. I tell you what, I've got friends in the Democratic Unionist Party who would be aghast.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the party that had an issue with a line in your motion that says it's wrong to view the LGBTQ community as requiring a fix or a cure. So you can't say you don't know that view doesn't exist. And it's a view that is expressed across the board by the DUP time and again.
Yes, it is, and you're absolutely right. And as a political party, that view I think is fundamentally wrong. But when I look at people within the party, they're not all the same. They don't all have the same view. People join a political party for a variety of different reasons. I think Tim is a guy who's in the DUP. He might even be a paid up member. I don't know, but I tell you what, I have a huge respect for Tim. Is the point I've making. I've got elected representatives who I know in the DUP who are aghast at this, but you know, and they don't support it. So I look at people as being people. And the point that I'm trying to make is my vision for unionism is that we are a union of people, and that union of people is a union of all people, no matter of who they are, shape, size, religious or sexual orientation. It doesn't really matter. You know, the union is a union of people. It's not just about territory. If we don't get our people to be united, then we don't have a union. And that's the problem that we have in regards to this.
Can we talk about how this might impact the Stormont Assembly if there is a leadership change in the DUP, Tim? Are we potentially looking at a collapse now?
Well, of course, the First and Deputy First Minister have to be elected together. And so if there is a change of First Minister, that requires some choreography around that. I mean, look, I think Irish language legislation is going to be the challenge sort of domestically for a new DUP leader. Arlene Foster said a couple of weeks ago that she didn't see that there'd be legislative time in this mandate to get Irish language through. I mean, she said about 3 or 4 weeks ago that the Irish language legislation was happening in this mandate, and she said, "Shane, so it's going to happen, let it be." And she rolled back from that position a week or so ago when she said, well, there might not be legislative time. So I think that's going to be the issue that's going to need to be sorted out. Is this new leader going to be able to push through that Irish language legislation and allow that to happen? Or is this going to spark another political crisis if they say, well, we're not actually progressing that particular part of the new decade and new agreement? So I think this Irish Language Act is going to be difficult, not just for the DUP, but I think it'll also create difficulties for Doug and the Ulster Unionist Party as well. And I think it's something unionists need to deal with if the Assembly is going to go forward and be secure and be stable.
Okay, Doug, do you agree with that? That ultimately it may depend on who gets the gig as to whether this creates a political pinch point at Stormont?
Yes, in many ways. I think we are in a political crisis now, no matter which way this spins out. You know, we have real concerns that we're a year out from an election, and that might sound like an awful long time, but people are now starting to move into election mode, and those who are trying to show themselves as a strong unionist party are trying to flex their muscles to do that, and I think they will put people in who show that strength, but that strength will alienate other people, and I think we have got a real concern that the Assembly, which is already fragile, which I think is being held together because we're in the middle of a pandemic, and if there was no pandemic, I think there's a good chance that it may have fractured and crumbled, or certainly not been workable by now. So I have real concerns about where we go. And the reality to all of this is that the only people who will suffer when we get politics wrong yet again is the people of Northern Ireland. And it really is disheartening to think that the same people are going to suffer because of political ineptitude. We really need to try and deal with this in one way or the other.
And can your party, the UUP, work with Edwin Poots if he becomes the next leader of the DUP?
Well, we have to work with whoever is the leader, is the reality. And we will have to work with Edwin. I mean, let's not vilify the man. You know, he has very different views. But he has very different views from us, and we will maybe not agree with him. But let's not vilify people before they're in position. Yeah. We have the health minister. I think Robin Swan has been an outstanding health minister. He has not played party politics. He's not going to play party politics. He will do his role within that executive. But we have to try and work with whoever is in power.
Okay.
And if we can work with a political party which has a terrorist arm, I'm sure we can work with the DUP.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you both, Tim Kearns and Doug Beattie. We'll be talking to Tim Marshall about his new book after this break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.